Hello and welcome to DeveloPod, the podcast from IITEFL's TDSIG, that's a Teacher Development Special Interest Group. My name is James Taylor and I'm here to introduce today's show. So if you're a loyal listener, you'll know that we've been doing a series of interviews based around the theme, the future of teacher development. And in fact, you should know that this theme is not just a theme here on this podcast, but throughout the activities that we're doing as part of TDSIG for this year. So soon we'll be having an issue of our journal, the TDAJ, coming with articles on this theme. And we're also going to be having our Web Carnival, our online conference, on the same theme. So I hope you can enjoy those as well. But for now, let's get on with today's episode. Let's hand it over now to Christian, who will explain more.
So welcome to the virtual studio, David Valent. Welcome, David. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Christian.
Yeah, so welcome. Nice to see you. And perhaps we could start by telling the listeners what your background is in ELT, and in particular, your interest in English language teacher development.
Okay, so I've worked in the ELT world for about 25 years now, in many different roles, starting as a teacher and then moving into academic management, as well as teacher training, including training on international ELT qualifications, but also throughout my time as a manager and as a trainer, I've always had a strong interest in bespoke development, grassroots development, needs-driven development for the teachers that I've managed, the teachers that I've worked with, and particularly teachers in mainstream education. So those teaching English in primary and secondary schools, that's been a big part of my work, as well as training on the international qualification.
And where are you based at the moment, David?
So I'm actually based in the Arctic Circle in northern Norway. Mm-hmm. And I work in a university there, and I teach on a five-year master's program for Norwegian teachers of English who are going to teach in primary schools. And I'm also doing my PhD there at the moment.
Okay. So would you say your particular interest is within primary school education and young learners?
Yes, absolutely. Particularly in school settings. So the teaching of English in the mainstream education sector would be my particular interest. Yeah.
And how would you say that teacher development has changed in the past few years, particularly in the area of young learners, primary school?
Yeah, so I think in the ELT sector, we've seen a move from young learner English teaching being a kind of an add-on or a bolt-on or an extension of adult ELT practices, an adaptation of adult ELT, into becoming a specialism, needing specialist skills, specialist qualifications, and specialist awareness, I'd say, in its own right. And so I think now development is much more age relevant, age sensitive, age appropriate, and mindful of the learners as different from adults, and not making unhelpful comparisons with, because there's so many age-related differences when it comes to learning any language, including English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that was a theme of one of the main plenaries at IITEFL a few years ago, in terms of making young learners an area in itself, which is due by right the attention that it deserves. Yeah. So, what themes do you currently see within teacher development in the area of young learners, ELT?
I think it's because we're now taking a much more age-driven approach and a bespoke approach and making stronger links with national curricula and what the learners are learning at school in their other subjects. I think there's now a stronger focus on areas that go beyond the language. So, of course, we're language teachers, language is our vehicle, language is our focus, but it's within the context of, I think, a useful umbrella way of putting it would be wider educational goals. So, for example, my research is particularly in interculturality. So that's a big one, diversity awareness, the environment, life skills, you know, the 21st century skills, all of those things, and how we can weave language through that, around it, in it, rather than the language as the object, you know, as the linguistic system. And I think that's where we're at, or where I believe we should be when it comes to development for YL, ELT nowadays, is that how can we bring the language in to achieving these bigger goals, these bigger educational goals, rather than only teaching language in a very object-focused way, as it was more traditionally.
So how do teachers perhaps offer a course like a CELTA course or a Trinity TESOL course, adapt them, or even more experienced teachers who are used to teaching language, and they have been told for many years that they need to teach a wider curriculum, but I think for many that's still quite a jump. How might teachers need to adapt them?
So I think they, as you say, it is a big change for many, and a big ask and a big task, especially if we have children with very little English, which is the case all over the world. The younger the children, also depending on the context, etc. So I think they need vehicles, age-relevant vehicles that are going to help them to do the job. For example, a big area of my research and interest is picture books. So I think this is, you know, a very powerful vehicle for giving the context for exploring these bigger themes in an age-relevant way while working in the language as well. So I think working with children's literature, working with real content, working with, you know, film clip. I mean, back to authentic material, really. And I think teachers need a lot of support within how to exploit that material, how to create pedagogical materials around that material. But I do think modern course books are much better at this nowadays across the publishers, really, and are bringing in more real content and are trying to give teachers that support in teaching these wider goals, such as the environment, well, you know, environmental activism, really, not just about the environment, but, you know, action against climate change, whatever, and then also building in that language support. I mean, some people would say this is a CLIL approach. I'm not particularly a CLIL person myself. I think it sits comfortably, though, with our whole principle of the value of authentic materials, such as literature, songs, music, and film, and then how to weave language in and through that. And obviously, that needs a lot of development around materials creation and principle task development and all of that. So it is a big ask, and it isn't something that teachers will find easy alone. They need to be part of a community in that development.
Mm-hmm. Presumably, it will need also training around how to integrate life skills and 21st century skills and diversity and so forth, which the course books in part are getting better at, would you agree? But perhaps not so much in terms of diversity in all its aspects.
Oh, there's many hidden identities and silenced voices still in course book materials, absolutely. And that's why I am such a big advocate for authentic material. And I think really from the earliest stages of a teacher's developmental journey, but learning to work with authentic materials linked obviously to the children's ages, their English levels and their life experience and their context, but selecting material and then crafting pedagogical tasks around that material, I think needs to be brought in from the beginning. Otherwise, if they are totally coursebook reliant or the school insists on only using those materials, as you say, Christian, that we, when it comes to diversity, we will be not seeing certain people in our classrooms, or not valuing the learners' diversity as well in our English lessons if we're only coursebook dependent.
And how would you say the creation of materials and the support the teachers might need around that is related to the development of the wider curriculum, for example, 21st century skills, life skills, metacognition, cognition, etc.?
I think they have to go hand in hand, because that it's through the materials design that the teacher, so for example, if we're talking about metacognitive development, so that's, you know, a huge area, complex area as well. So how can we do that in an English, you know, English language learning classroom situation? So for example, building in systematic reflection and reviewing in child-friendly, age-appropriate ways, building in early self-assessment, and also responses, you know, responses to tasks and activities. What did you enjoy about that? What didn't you enjoy? What would you like to do more of? What would you like to do less of? So those basic questions, but building them in so the learners have voice in that and can reflect on their learning, needs to be part of materials design. Otherwise, in my experience of observing lessons around the world, it gets missed. And it's, if it's not in the materials, then if time's running out, it's that kind of the reflection stage or the reviewing of the lesson that is missed out. And so I think materials are a huge key for bringing in these wider educational goals into our English lessons with children, and the need for training and development in materials design is absolutely essential.
Yeah. I think that's quite a specialist area, isn't it? And many teachers, including the newly qualified, are extremely enthusiastic about making materials, but not necessarily making materials of the quality that you would hope for. It's a really specialist area, isn't it? Can we really expect teachers to be truly capable and competent in doing that and integrating these areas that you suggest?
It's a challenge, and some people in the materials writing field in ELT say things like all teachers are materials writers, and I know what they mean by that, and in a way they are, because we all create materials for our classes, or many of us do and have done for many, many years, even if it's something as basic as a worksheet. But as you say, there's creating a worksheet, Christian, for your lesson to give extra practice in an area. And then there's creating material which raises awareness of diversity and raises awareness of, you know, global issues and so on in an age accessible way, which is linguistically accessible at the same time. So absolutely, it's a huge ask. And so I think teachers need a lot of support in this area, a lot of scaffolding. And an example, if to make this very practical, if I can, I want to refer to some materials because they are open access. They're completely freely downloadable. But I worked on a three-year project from between 2019 to 2022. And this was a project on intercultural learning using picture books for primary ELT. And there were five countries involved in this. And we worked on a course there was about 25 hours of input, and then materials creation phase, and then a classroom experimentation phase, and then a reflection phase and a refining the materials phase. And this was teachers in their classes, working on Zoom actually across borders to create materials around a chosen picture book for intercultural learning. But of course, in the 25-hour course, we did a lot on task design, language support, and also how to reflect on the topic, the intercultural topic, such as, you know, climate activism, in a way that's linguistically accessible for children learning English. So I just wanted to talk about that. So it, for any listeners who are interested, they can download 18 of these kits, teaching packs, from the ICEPLL website. So that's ICEPLL, ICEPLL, for anyone interested. So I totally agree with you, Christian. It's a big ask and it's a big task. And this is why I think teachers need examples and models, but training as well.
Okay. There's some of the training that I see, particularly online these days, and not only around materials development, seems to be quite a low level. And there seems to be an echo chamber. Maybe it's because I'm a more experienced teacher that I'm not so easily impressed, but there seems to be a bit of an echo chamber at the end of every training on Zoom, that everyone applauds the trainer for what I see to be really kind of low-level ideas. What you're talking about is high-level stuff, in fact, which is quite integrated in terms of teacher development. How can teachers maybe access this kind of development?
Well, I think what you've just described there, Christian, describes the state of ELT training and development today, in the sense of, if we're going to do these big things, you know, we have these big ideas and we're going to help teachers to realize them with learners of English, children, teenagers, adults, whoever, in their classrooms, we've got to go deep. As you say, we've got to go complex, we've got to go rich. Otherwise, we're never going to explore huge issues of human significance in a gap fill, you know, in a classic TEFL way. That is just not going to happen. And I know what you mean, because I'm seeing a lot of materials, even around diversity, which is super well-meaning, but actually all they are is a veiled grammar drill, really. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we're English teachers, and yes, the language has to be, you know, I was going to say dominant, it has to be central, sure. But if we're going to work, but this is the thing, this is what you're talking about, goes to the heart of it. With children, language isn't only the center. It's the child is the center. And so language needs to be much more embedded and woven and wrapped around. And I actually feel that isn't only for young children. I think with teenagers and even adults, if we do the meaningful, real topics, then language becomes the vehicle rather than the driver. Yeah. And I think this is another thing that I'm interested in my research as well, is this move towards deep learning and this move towards deep reading and deep engagement with text. And I don't just mean books, I mean all kinds of text, multimedia texts and so on. And the criticality is another thing in ELT that is so desperately needed. And I'm not saying people aren't doing that, because many people are, but many aren't. And I think that speaks to what you were talking about earlier and the need for this deeper engagement. And so I think it probably needs to start, in my opinion, with being honest and being honest and saying, well, if we want to do these, if we want to teach these wider educational goals, and if this is the resource we're using, what's the gap there? And so how can we go about in our developmental journey plugging that gap? We need to explore. I mean, you know, if take the example of diversity. That's a kind of a lifetime's work of engagement and learning. And I think that's something we have to remember in ELT, because the qualifications, particularly in the out-of-school sector, you mentioned things like, you know, CELTA course and so on earlier, because those are kind of one-offs, and then you've ticked the box, you have that qualification. I think there's been too much of the assumption that I'm done now and we're never done. And that's the point. That's the whole point about deep learning, that we've always got more to learn. And I think it might sound simple, but if we start from that point, the learner's needs, their age, their experience, their context, but also what more do I need to learn as a teacher around this area, and how can I marry those together? I think that's what it is, a mind shift, really.
As an aside, I'm a governor in a primary school at the moment, and they're doing a lot of work on something called the empowerment approach, which essentially is around emotional intelligence and self-awareness for the children, getting them to understand their own emotions and to manage them and to understand how the brain works. And this, I've seen myself firsthand how empowering it can be for children. What do you think that the world of, and maybe it's quite a wide question, but what has the world of English language teacher training got to learn from mainstream primary education?
Loads. I think putting the child at the starting point and the entry point in the child's world rather than the language. So we still are dominated by the structural syllabus in ELT. And if we're going to really meet the needs and interests of these children as people in their own right, rather than just as future adults, then I think we have to subsume the language under these the wider development of the child. And I think mainstream education, depending on the context, of course, and on the school and the teacher and everything, but I do think mainstream ed, at least in certain contexts, is more aware of child-centeredness, of holistic approaches, of things like you mentioned, metacognition, self-reflection, emotional intelligence. I think those things in certain curricula around the world are much more embedded in the mainstream sector than in the ELT sector. And the most successful YLELT programs out of school, so after school and at weekends, those kind of classes that many of us know in the ELT world, I think the best way forward developmentally would be to try and match up and marry with the national curricula of the country that we're working in. And then we can extend it, consolidate it, reinforce it, enhance it, maybe make it more fun and creative, because in ELT, we often have more freedom than in national curriculum contexts, I find. So, but starting with the curriculum, I find it quite strange when some schools in the language school sector don't even look at the curriculum of the country. They say, you know, we have our syllabus, we're doing this. And I think, oh, but those learners are then missing out on a real opportunity for taking their learning further.
Well, very often they might just be getting a well-meaning but a grammar-based syllabus within their own school, and we could be out helping out to provide that communicative reinforcement within the ELT world based around that, as you say, their own school curricula, right? Yeah,
absolutely. And I think as well, what is interesting, say where I am, that is a context we don't hear a lot about in ELT. So Norway, for example, it's really interesting, the vocabulary. I mean, there's a lot of research around it, but the vocabulary children are developing in Norway in English is from gaming. So it's completely from out of school, and it's not from formal learning at all. And I think it, whether in mainstream ed or in ELT, if we were to ignore that, we're missing something really about their lives and their language development.
Yeah. So what, in a nutshell, do you think a teacher's priority should be in terms of teacher development for young learners, teaching in within young learner sector, at least over the next perhaps decade or so?
I think putting the life stage first and becoming a specialist, you know, I think we've got to move away from the generic idea of YL equals one thing and then really go into those age bands, you know, of early years of lower primary, upper primary and lower and upper secondary and so on. And I'm not talking here about English level, I'm talking about ages and really tapping into what it means to teach, what are the needs of those age ranges, and how can we go about trying to meet those needs, but also the interests, you know, levels, English levels are changing in so many countries because of exposure, out of school, informal settings, streaming, gaming, all of these ways that younger children are accessing English. And I think we need to tap into that in our English teaching, in so it's more in sync, so that there isn't this separation between the English that they are learning from in their English lessons and the English that they're getting exposed to. Now, that's hard because it's, you know, we're talking here about the entertainment sector. And you know, we often hear, and I don't disagree, that edutainment isn't necessarily a good thing because it's not really deep learning. But we need to think about the language potential in things like gaming and how can we tap into that and how can we draw, I mean, I know very little about game design, but how could we tap into that maybe in designing pedagogical tasks and materials?
Mm-hmm. This comes back to a question that a teacher from Czech Republic, I believe it was, had a few months ago, and she was coming to do a course which I was teaching. And some of her students weren't interested in her lessons at all, despite the fact she seemed like a very committed teacher. And I said, well, what are they interested in? She said, gaming. And I said, well, have you tried to tap into that? And she found it very difficult to know where to start because she wasn't interested in gaming herself. So how would she, as a teacher, perhaps in the Czech Republic, go about informing herself and marrying those two worlds, if you like, of what she has to teach on the syllabus, and there's a heavy workload in that in terms of her curriculum, and the interest of the students like gaming?
It's a really challenging one and it's a really big one, but it's one, if I can take myself back to around 2011 to 2013, when I was managing a YL department in Myanmar, actually, and we were thinking about ways to reach our younger secondary learners. And at the time that I asked, you know, what are they watching? And I did little focus groups with the students and they were watching Glee. I don't know if you remember the TV show Glee. Mm-hmm. And so I spent, you know, a lot of my time watching Glee and developing lessons around Glee. And so what we had our course book lessons, we also had our Glee lesson. And what happened was the DVD shop, because it, you know, this is going back over a decade and it was DVDs still at the time, sold out all copies of Glee. And I thought, okay, well, this is my job done. They are listening and viewing extensively. So we've cracked it. But yes, I you know, I think we do have to, same with music and songs. I think we do have to go into their world, even though it's not perhaps our own interest. But I think if we are working with these younger age ranges, we do need to enter that world a little bit and perhaps give a couple of games a go and look at the principles of game design and think how we can not make our lessons into a whole gaming experience. That's maybe not realistic, but how could we bring in some principles of this kind of collaboration and, you know, communicating with your teammate to get a quest done in order to achieve some goal. How could we weave that into our language syllabus? It's not an easy task, but I think teacher educators have a role in helping teachers with this as well.
Super. Unless there's anything you'd like to add, I think let's round it up there. Thank you so much, David. Is there anything else you'd
like? Well, thank you. I'd just like to add, for listeners who are interested in research with children up to 12, to ages 3 to 12, we're starting a new association from mid-March, which teachers can join, and particularly those interested in research. And it's called ELRA, the Early Language Learning Research Association, ELLRA. And so for any teachers, teacher educators listening who are interested in moving into research, we'd really like to welcome them into our new association and our community. And there's a Facebook group already, and the website will be coming later in March. So do look out for ELRA, and it has a kind of the logo has leaves to symbolize growth and development. So we would love to welcome listeners to that community.
Thank you, David. We'll include the URL with our show notes, as we will with the resources you mentioned earlier. Thanks once again for joining us, and good luck in your ongoing research.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
A big thank you to Christian and to David for that really fascinating interview. Don't forget, this is one of a series, as I said, of these interviews. So if you've missed them, you can go back. And we also have interviews with Silvana Richardson, Richard Chin and Danny Norrington Davis, and Gabriel Diaz Margioli. We'll also have other interviews coming up, as I said, later in the series. So keep looking out for those. If you enjoy this podcast, of course, you must subscribe. So whichever listening platform you're using, make sure you hit the subscribe button so the next interview will pop into your feed when it becomes available. And of course, to make sure you stay in touch with our SIG by following us on our social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. So that's it from today's show. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of DevelopPod.